Do we have Diane on before we go ahead and get started? Or know whether or not she will be joining us?
I don't see her online yet, and I have not heard.
She did email that she would not be attending this afternoon.
Okay.
Okay, well, with that then, it is 3:31, and I'll go ahead and kick off and get started the Des Moines Water Works Planning Committee meeting for April 5th, 2002. Looks like most of us all are here on Zoom, and we'll have folks introduce themselves as they speak. The first agenda item we have for today is the 2021 Affirmative Action Program Overview.
Yes, Andrea, that overview will be presented today by Erica Hale from the HR department. Erica is going to go through the Affirmative Action Program Overview. That's basically an annual statistical analysis that we go through to evaluate where we stand compared to the availability within our pool of applicants, I guess I would say, and including internal applicants. And Erica will walk through that. I do want to distinguish for the board the difference between the Affirmative Action Program requirements, which is basically a federal program that we're required to participate in, and then we do participate in, on the one hand, and on the other hand, the Diversity and Inclusion Initiative that we are going through this year as part of the outcome from our strategic plan, where we will be retaining a consultant to help us develop what we're calling a diversity plan. So this is the statistical analysis that's part of the Affirmative Action Program. There will be more to come this year as we move through our D&I initiative, and that will be presented at a different time. But for now, we have the Affirmative Action Program Overview, and Erica, I'm going to let you take it away.
Thank you very much, Ted. Good afternoon. My name is Erica Hale, and I work with the Human Resources Department, and I'm here to talk today about Des Moines Water Works Affirmative Action Plan and the information and data behind our plan. I will start off our discussion today by explaining what an affirmative action is and walking through Des Moines Water Works data and placement goals and benchmarks for utilization of veterans and persons with disabilities. Please feel free to stop me at any time or ask questions as we go through this presentation. So first off, what is an affirmative action plan? An affirmative action plan is an effort to help discrimination and introduce more diversity into the workplace. Some providers have adopted affirmative action plans. Affirmative action refers to the outreach and recruitment methods that encourage minorities and other specific categories of the population to apply for jobs. The reason companies create affirmative action is to affect the diversity of applicants by attracting more minorities, females, veterans, and disabled persons. Affirmative action laws prohibit discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, national origin, disability, or veteran status, and requires affirmative action to ensure equality of opportunity in all aspects of employment. However, know that the laws surrounding affirmative action and hiring are subject to change, however, as these policies are often challenged in court. Not all companies are required to have affirmative action plans. However, the reasons listed for the requirement are here. The reason that Des Moines Water Works is required to provide an affirmative action plan is because we're considered a federal contractor based on the water purchased and used by federal buildings in the Des Moines area. Because Des Moines Water Works is required to establish an affirmative action plan. There are repercussions if we fail to do this, such as an audit by the OFCCP, but there also are many advantages within the workplace. Some are listed here in terms of diversity. It enhances our utilities' problem-solving capabilities by offering a wider array of possible solutions based on an increased range of experiences amongst staff. And additionally, when our employee base is representative of our surrounding community, we attract more applicants as we are seen as a desirable place to work. Once I outline the demographics of Des Moines Waterworks employee base, we will discuss placement goals. Placement goals are targets that we determine to be reasonably attainable by means of applying good faith effort to make all aspects of the entire affirmative action program work. Placement goals are used to measure progress towards achieving equal employment opportunity. We work with a company called OutSolve, who creates our affirmative action plan. We provide information and data to OutSolve, such as like applicant information, hiring and promotional data, and they provide statistical analysis of our data and compare that to the US Census information to determine our placement goals. Here is a snapshot of our current staff. Des Moines Water Works has 202 employees, including 19 minorities and 59 females. In 2021, we received 771 applications for our open positions. Of those 771 applications, 228 were from female candidates, including 57 minority females, and 9 applications were received from minority male candidates. We filled 31 positions internally, 3 promotions went to minority males, and another 3 promotions went to females within the organization. We hired 22 positions externally, and of those external hires, we hired 2 females and 2 minority females.
I think it was 5 females.
5 females, thank you, and 2 minority females. Thank you for reading my numbers. And so the next slide, we will look to see if Des Moines Water Works workforce matches the labor pool in terms of our racial and gender makeup. So this is an actual page from our affirmative action plan that shows the number of people in each job category. So it's this first column that talks about the group size of these, so the number of people in these job groups. The next 2 columns show the percentage of minority or female staff in those job groups. And then the next 2 columns show the availability in the central Iowa area. What we look closely at is the placement goals on the following 2 columns, and it tells us whether or not our employee base matches the makeup of applicable or available applicants in the local job market. And so as we look at this page, we see that we're doing a really good job in all categories but craft workers. And I'd like to add that craft workers has been a job group that we have struggled with the last couple of years. The next slide I'm going to show you is just a narrative.
Sorry. Sure. Can you describe what craft workers?
Absolutely. And I'm going to do that on the next slide.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Thank you.
No, you're good. And so, and actually I lied. It'll be on the next slide after this one. And so, again, sometimes people like to see it in a form that is similar to a spreadsheet, our engineers. This is just a narrative. So it talks about how many employees are in each group and the breakdown of how many people in that group are minorities or female. And so again, we do have a placement goal of 14% for craft workers. This will tell you what we want. So just to be clear, this placement goal is based on the statistical analysis of our 2021 labor pool. And this labor pool is determined by both internal availability, meaning people who could move into these positions, and the makeup of our community. And so while we do show that in 2021, We had craft workers were again listed as with placement goals for both minorities and females. This year, we only have the females that are the placement goals, and we need to hire an additional 9 full-time employees to reach that goal. If you're wondering what job titles fall under the craft worker category, they would be a utility mechanic, an equipment operator, a water production specialist, water distribution crew leader, auto mechanic, and concrete worker. Now, these aren't all the titles that we have within this category, but hopefully it gives you an idea of the types of jobs within this job group. Again, this is a job group that we have struggled to recruit both minorities and females into for several years. The main reason for this big change in terms of last year having minorities and females, and this year just having the goal for females, is based on the census data. Last year, we were using census data from 2010, and this year, we are using the most recent information, which came from 2018. One of the things that came out of the statistical analysis of our promotional data is called disparity analysis. And disparity analysis is a tool that measures the statistical relationship between two selected groups. And what it showed when looking at Des Moines Water Works information is that we hiring males over females when promoting employees out of laborers and the administrative support group. And the reason that is because there were males hired out, even though there were females available to do the work. However, the exact opposite thing happened with when we were promoting out of our managers group, and that showed that we hired females over males. And again, the managers group has more males in that group than females. However, a female was promoted. And so again, this is all due to internal promotions within the utility. However, we always do want to hire the most qualified applicant, regardless of race or gender. Any questions on that? Okay. The next we will talk about is the benchmark for protected veterans. Currently this year, that benchmark is 5.6%. And unfortunately, we did not meet this benchmark. While we hired 22 new employees, we did not hire any protected veterans. However, it's up to the employees or applicants to self-ID. And we do know that some current employees chose not to disclose their veteran status when self-IDing. We also have benchmarks for the utilization of individuals with disabilities. This year it is 7%. And so we will look at our staff and see if we actually meet that benchmark. And unfortunately, we don't. In reviewing the data that we provided OutSolve, this page shows the number of employees in each job category under group size, and whether or not our employees identified as disabled, and if we met that 7% benchmark. So it shows us what percentage of our employees have identified as disabled, and then this last column is whether or not we met this. We did not meet the utilization goals in many categories, but again, I want to be clear that these numbers reflect how employees self-identify. Frequently, employees may be reluctant to share private information about their disability with their employer out of fear of how the information may be used. And even if the employer knows of an employee's disability, we may not designate that employee as disabled. Only the employee can self-identify. Okay. Again, this is just a narrative of the previous slide. There has not been a lot of change in this group. So it is something that we can improve on, and we do try in our recruitments. So what have we been doing to increase diversity? I would say that COVID has definitely provided a challenge for us in terms of there weren't a lot of career fairs to attend or other in-person trainings, but we did have several trainings that we attended this past year. Senior management had Claudia Schabel come in and provide a training on the business case for diversity. HR staff attended a webinar conducted by the Greater Dearborn Partnership that discussed how we could utilize immigrant talent. And we also, and HR also attended a webinar regarding equity in local government in Iowa. And I think we also would be remiss in not pointing out that in 2022, we have started the process of selecting a consultant who will assist us in creating a diversity plan for next year. Well, they will create the plan this year and probably put it into action next year. I want you to know that we are always trying to evaluate our outreach and recruitment in order to reach more diverse and qualified applicants. Whenever we have an open position, we share by email to at least 24 different groups to be posted at their business locations. This list includes such groups as Creative Visions, the Iowa Asian Alliance, Veterans Helping Veterans, and the Iowa Division of Latino Affairs. And that ends the affirmative action presentation. Are there questions that I can answer for you, Andrea?
So with the outside hiring, I know it's a little bit different or maybe difficult for promotions, but with outside hiring, do we do any like blind resumes or any practices that have been discussed over the past few years to kind of eliminate some biases or tendencies?
I'll let Doug speak more on this, but I do know that we have participated in that ban the box. So that's not something that we ask up front. And the main reason is we do background checks. We're going to find that out eventually, but we don't need to know that from all candidates. That is just something that is allowed or something that's required for the final candidate that we select. But I'll let Doug talk more on that since I'm not intimately involved with the recruiting process.
Yeah, we have not done anything as far as removing, you know, blinding names on applications or anything like that. We have not followed that process with our review of applications.
Okay. And so as we, I know that as you mentioned at the beginning here, that this is kind of the federal program that we're responding to and doing a review of. Will any of these pieces, do we anticipate any of these pieces of the federal program making their way over to our own DEI plan coming out of our strategic plan? Or will that kind of be a different vision for us?
It's really hard for us to answer that at this time. We have received approximately, I think it's 10 or 11 RFPs from consultants around the nation that we're in the process of reviewing and selecting. And so it's hard to say what will come out of that, but we are looking for leaders in diversity and inclusion to help us determine what are the best options for Des Moines Waterworks. One thing that I thought was very important that was brought to our attention is that although there is a lot of importance in bringing in diverse candidates for employment, we also need to make sure that diverse employees feel welcome here. And so I can't remember the exact words that they used, but they talked about, you wanna clean up your house before you invite people over. And so I know that's something that we're really looking at, but it's hard to know what the plans will end up being without any of the data that they're going to be looking at. Doug, Ted, anything more to add?
Well, I would add that the federal program is more of a statistical analysis to help us understand where we stand in terms of our workforce representing the community that we hire from. Our plan is much more, it's a much broader scope plan where we're going to look at workplace, customer service. We're going to, I expect, based on the proposals that we've received, we're going to do a lot of work on, making Des Moines Water Works an entity that would be an employer of choice for diverse candidates, or an inviting or welcoming employer. We hope that that will lead to us, meeting the mark in every one of those categories. But they are two very different approaches. One is, we're going to try to kind of build from the ground up a welcoming environment, do a better job of that. Then we will do the statistical analysis on an ongoing basis and hope to show improvement.
Thank you. Joel, do you have any questions or thoughts?
Yeah, I have a question about internal hiring. And do we post all jobs publicly? I gathered the answer is no. I recall some positions being filled internally without a posting. And I'm just curious of the kind of quick recap of what our policy is regarding posting jobs when we may have an internal candidate. I'm thinking about how that may factor in to our, efforts to diversify our workforce.
I'll take a swing at that and then let Doug or Erica follow up or correct me where I'm wrong. But when we have clearly a number of qualified candidates within, and especially in positions where we have what we call a job family, where there's kind of a natural progression, and we typically train the people on the job over a period of time and through a number of positions. The one that comes to mind is in water distribution, where we have distribution laborers and installers and crew leaders and field service techs. It's, there's kind of a progression there, and we really need them to gain that experience in the entry-level positions to be qualified and prepared for the licensing and the work that we need them to do. In cases like that, we don't always post those positions externally because we have qualified applicants. We need qualified applicants, and frankly, we want to give those people the opportunity to move up within the organization. If there's any question about whether we have qualified applicants or whether the applicants internal will be interested, then we will post internally and externally at the same time. But there are a handful of positions where the most qualified people are already here, and we post those internally only. Doug, would you add to that?
I think you've covered it well, Ted. That describes our process.
That all sounds reasonable, and I don't know what the best practices are here, what standard, but I hope that will, our policy and just common practices around that will be part of the review of our diversity initiative. Will at least be given some consideration. And what we're doing now may be ideal, maybe best practices, I don't know, but I think it's worth looking at that.
Joel, I really look forward to hearing what the consultants say. We did have 10 or 11 proposals. We've had some good proposals. We've got a team reviewing those. I'm anxious to see what they tell us. I anticipate that there are things we can do differently and better. I suspect that those things won't be specifically related to recruitment and hiring. There'll be other things that we haven't even thought about. Sure. That will just kind of set the stage for more successful recruitment and hiring, but we shall see.
Great report, Erica. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Erica.
Thank you. The next agenda item we have is the Floor Drive Operations Centered Stormwater Systems Improvement. And I'm assuming you have somebody on deck to talk about that as well.
We do, Andrea. An incredibly important, rather technical subject, which is stormwater management, especially when we have the treatment plant area, the ring levee locked down in the event of a flooding situation. But Vern Rash, who is a project manager in our engineering department, is going to share a presentation that I think is well done and will be informative for the board on our stormwater, our operations center stormwater system improvement. So Vern, please.
Vern, you're unmuted. You're muted, Vern.
Okay, I somehow lost my screen.
I can see your screen and hear you now, although I'm not sure it's the screen you want. I'm assuming it's the screen you want to show.
It's in presenter mode now, Vern.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, maybe
if you start the slideshow, it might give us the, there you go. That's what we want to see.
Okay.
And Vern, if you don't mind, could you turn your camera on as well today?
I can find that darn thing.
A little different than the.
Yeah. I saw it earlier. I don't see my camera now.
Okay, I'll be right down.
Oh, wait, here it is. I got it. Found it.
There you are.
All right. I've used Zoom twice. I'm used to Teams.
They're all a little different.
Okay. There, how's that look? So you've got this screen right here, correct?
Looking good.
Okay, very good. All right. Sorry for the technical difficulty. And Ted, thanks for the introduction and good afternoon, everyone. I've been asked to be here today to describe in 8 to 10 minutes a recent contract that the Board of Trustees entered into. That contract was called the Floor Drive Operations Center Stormwater System Improvements Phase 2 Project. Now, 8 to 10 minutes is not much time, and I believe you'd prefer to hear more about this project than simply the bid price was $1.8 million, that the contractor is WRH Incorporated from South Amana, Iowa, that there'll be 3 pumps and motors, each capable of pumping 5,000 gallons per minute, and that the project is scheduled to be completed by December of 2022. Now, while I believe cost and who's doing the work and what equipment will be provided and when the project's going to be finished, those are all nice things to know. But I also believe, however, that being better informed on some of the background to this project would not only be helpful for you, but it would be interesting as well, even for a seemingly mundane topic like stormwater collection system improvements. Most of us, me included, tend to take stormwater collection systems for granted. And this may be a good thing because generally that means that the stormwater collection system is performing as it should. But taking a stormwater collection system for granted could also be problematic in that it could lead to a lack of familiarity with some of the individual components and how those individual components work together as a system for its intended purpose. As we begin our time this afternoon together, I'd like you to allow me to provide maybe a brief 2 to 3 minute primer on some stormwater collection system basics. I think these basics will be helpful for us as we continue our discussion on into this afternoon. I've got 3 stormwater collection system basics that I'd like to bring up here today and share with you. The first point I'd like to raise is the purpose or the functionality of a stormwater drainage system. And the purpose or the function of a stormwater collection system is to collect minor design storm runoff and convey major design storm runoff to a specific discharge point. The second stormwater collection system basic that I'd like to bring up is that a stormwater system can be as simple as a ditch, or it can be as complex as a system of numerous intakes, manholes, pipes, ditches, stormwater detention or retention basins, and pump stations. And then the third stormwater collection system basic I'd like to mention is that stormwater collection systems, or sometimes they're called drainage systems, can consist of two components, and they do consist of two components, the minor system and the major system. Now, this is a universal characteristic, and it applies to all stormwater collection systems, including the system at the Fluor Drive Operations Center that we'll be taking a look at here in a few minutes. I've used some terms here so far this afternoon that I think would be worth spending a little bit of time defining, and those terms are minor design storm runoff, major design storm runoff, minor system, and major system. And we'll start with minor system first. We'll kind of work our way backwards. A minor system is designed to convey runoff from a minor or ordinary storm recurring at regular intervals. And that recurring interval, or a lot of times it's called recurrence interval, is generally up to 2 years. Commonly, maybe more like 2 to 5 years, but it can also be up to 10 years. Now, recurrence interval, that's another new term that deserves a little bit of explanation. For example, a recurrence interval for a storm for a 10-year storm, that is a storm event that has a 10% chance, and engineers like to use the word probability, so 10% probability, of being equal or exceeded in any given year. A one in 10 year chance. Likewise, with as another example, a 5-year storm, that would have a 20% chance or a 20% probability of occurring in any given year. The components of this minor system are some very, very common components that we're very familiar with. And it includes such things as curbs, gutters, inlets, pipes, open channels, swales, and ditches. Major system, on the other hand, is designed to convey runoff that exceeds the capacity of the minor system. Again, that minor system being a system of curbs, gutters, intakes, manholes, pipes. And the recurrence interval for a major system, it has commonly a design of 100 years. Now, again, using that definition that we talked about earlier, a recurrence interval for a 100-year storm, that's a storm event that has a 1% chance or a 1% probability of being equaled or exceeded in any given year. So it's not a very high chance. If I was a betting person on betting if there was going to be a 100-year storm that would occur in 2022, I'd keep my money in my pocket. It could happen, but it's not likely. An important note about major systems, and I want to emphasize here, is that it includes the components of the minor system. Again, the curbs, gutters, intakes, manholes, system of pipes. That's part of the major system. And then we add natural or engineered backup systems in case of an overflow from that minor system. And these natural and engineered backup systems can consist of overland relief, detention basins or retention basins, pump stations, or energy dissipation devices. There's an important note I want to make right here, because it's one that's we're going to carry through with the rest of our discussion here this afternoon. And again, it builds on this minor system being included as part of the major system. This major-minor concept can be described as a system within a system, for it comprises two distinct, and not separate, but two distinct drainage networks. And that's the case that we'll see with the stormwater collection system for the operations center, a major system working together with a minor system. Now, this completes that 2 to 3 minute primer that I was talking about on stormwater collection system basics. Now I will describe for you the stormwater collection system for the Fluor Drive Operations Center. And we're going to accomplish this from an historical perspective, more specifically, by conducting a 100-year historical overview, if you can believe that or not, 100-year quick overview of the stormwater collection at the Des Moines Waterworks Fluid Drive Operations Center. This aerial photograph right here is taken from about 500 to 1,000 feet above ground. Looks off towards the southwest. We've got Fluor Drive as it existed in the 1920s to 1930s right here, and the Raccoon River here on the lower left-hand corner. Now, even though we're at 500 or 1,000 feet, we can still see the minor stormwater drainage system that, again, consists of curbs, gutters, and more than likely there's some open channels that direct the water from this system of curbs and gutters into this lagoon area here, which is really a prototype for a stormwater detention basin. These swales, open channels, ditches direct this water to this discharge point in either the lagoon or maybe even overland to the Raccoon River. That would be our discharge point. Now, you might ask, how did we know this is a 1920s and 1930s photo? And there's some interesting things I want to point out here. Dated this photograph, not so much from the things that we see in the photograph, but the things that we don't see in the photograph. For instance, the filter building, which is a very prominent structure in the operations center, sits in this area right here. It was constructed in the mid-1940s, but it's not here in this photograph. So that tells us that this photo predates 1945. We go back and even a little bit further with the iron reduction plant, which now serves as a 10 million gallon clear well. It's located right here, but we don't see it in the picture. So using our critical thinking skills, we can come to the conclusion that this photograph predates 1930. Well, this is the pump station, and this is the garage structure as it was known in 1920 and referred to. And this is the warehouse, as it was referred to in the 1920s. Now it's called Central Stores. These buildings were built in 1920. So that's where we come up with the range for this particular photo, the vintage of being the 1920s to 1930s. One other interesting historical aspect about this photograph that I want to point out is that we've got three structures over here. And these were cottages that were on Des Moines Waterworks grounds. And one of the cottages was used as a residence for the general manager. Another cottage was used as the residence for the ground superintendent. And then I don't recall what the old timers used to tell me this third one was for. I don't recall that, but it was also a residence for a Des Moines Waterworks employee. Of course, those cottages aren't there anymore. They were removed in 1968, and the Denman Memorial Garden and fountain sits in this location right here. So we've got some landmarks here that I wanted to point out that are important to realize where they're at, because now I'm going to start adding features that exist at the operations center now, just to put some perspective and context on what we're going to be talking about. Here's the employee entrance, also called the service entrance. This was constructed in 1968, and that's the time when these cottages were torn down, was when this service entrance was constructed. The floodgate, of course, was built in 1994, and it's located here. We've got our main service road that comes from the general office into the plant area along here. And then probably the most prominent feature that we have is the levee structure, which was built in 1974. And that construction project filled in our lagoon, or again, our prototype detention basin. Well, this is what the operations center looks like now. If we were taking the flight of the crow from the general office and coming up on the operations center from the south. And I'll point out some of those same landmarks that I pointed out to you in the 1920s picture. There's the pump station here and the garage structure here. And then the warehouse, or again, central stores as we call it, is right here. And then the lagoon area, of course, which is filled in when the levee was constructed, it was located right here. I think one of the things that we can see from this particular photograph as we compare it to the 1920s is that the existing overland drainage patterns that existed in the 1920s are no longer present now in 2022. So the question becomes, how did we get here? Well, those existing drainage patterns and that passive drainage system that existed in 1920, it served the purpose very well and was even enhanced in 1968 with the addition of a 20-inch pipe with some storm sewer intakes and manholes. And that's this pipe right here. It was constructed about the location where Central Stores is now and consisted of, if I recall right, of about 400 feet of pipe. And it directed water from the operations center to an outlet at the discharge point in the Raccoon River off to the east here, just east of Fluor Drive. And this would be what we would refer to as a minor system. Again, a system of curbs, gutters, intakes, manholes, and pipe, all conveying runoff to a particular discharge point, which is the Raccoon River. In 1974, the service complex was constructed, and that's this facility right here. And our minor drainage system that existed in 1968, that was extended north in conjunction with this service complex structure. It was extended north and to the east to pick up this area of the operations center up around the pump station. As I mentioned earlier, in 1974, that was when the levee was constructed. Basically, we constructed a big bowl, made a big bowl out of the operations center. One of the main points we want to make here is the overland drainage pattern that had been relied on since 1920s now no longer existed. Total reliance for stormwater runoff conveyance consisted of relying on our minor system of curbs, intakes, and pipe right here to convey any water or runoff that occurred here in the operations center. This was the sole system that we were able to rely on to direct and convey that water to the Raccoon River. And in the period from 1974 to 2003, we had numerous facilities that were built that added impervious services to this area inside the operations center. We had parking lots, access roads, new roof structures. This is the lime sludge dewatering facility that was built in 1992. The lab that was built in the 1990s. Again, the service complex that was built in 1974. And this parking lot, which was built as part of this particular project here, was in the 1990s, along with some other pavement and access roads. So you can see what we've done since 1974 is we've taken this bowl and now we've lined it with concrete or impervious roof surfaces. And what the result of that has been, the consequence of that has been, is that we've increased the volume of runoff that now that this minor system of curbs, gutters, and intakes needs to convey to the Raccoon River. So now the question becomes, okay, what happens in the event of a flood when the Raccoon River level rises up 10 feet and becomes bank full and rises maybe to 12 feet and then begins to inundate Fluor Drive? Well, that water would back up through our stormwater system pipe and get into our operations center, which would not be a good thing, of course. So our emergency flood procedures for the Raccoon River include a provision where we close the valve on this stormwater discharge pipe when water is over Fluor Drive. And when we close that valve, then that prevents the water from backing up from the Raccoon River into our operations center. Well, when we added that valve to this stormwater pipe, now basically what we've done is we've taken away our minor system of stormwater conveyance by closing this valve here. And we've lost our overland pattern of drainage when we constructed the levee in the 1974. So in 2003, we constructed the stormwater pump station. And what this did is it restored the overland drainage system that existed outside the levee to the overall network of the minor system that existed inside the levee. And I think another way to say that is that the minor system is now reunited with the major system, the overland flow system, by the stormwater pump station that was constructed in 2003. Because it takes the water that flows through this system now, takes it and pumps it over the levee where the overland flow patterns can now convey it to the Raccoon River. And here's a couple of photographs from that 2003 construction. That pump station consisted of a single vault for the purpose of collecting runoff from inside the operations center during flood events. Then our operations staff would quickly install pumps inside of this pump station. And all the piping and all the electrical was already preset in here. So all our operations staff needed to do was just drop the pumps down into the structure. And then they were able to pump the water out of the operations center over the levee. And then again, taking advantage of the overland flow patterns to carry that water and convey it to the Raccoon River. Well, even though we had that pump station in 2003, we still experienced ponding in some areas of the treatment plant during major storm events. And that ponding took place primarily in parking lots, especially this one here at the south part of the plant, then also in the area just outside of central stores. And this is what the ponding would look like outside of central stores. Again, not a good situation when we've got materials and equipment and product stored inside our central stores building here. So in 2015, the Des Moines Water Works embarked on phase one of the Fluor Drive Operations Center Stormwater System Improvements Project. And basically what that project consisted of was taking these pipes that consisted of a minor system that had existed since 1968 and enlarging them so they would have more capacity to carry water from this ponding area in this parking lot and from the ponding area here that was occurring just outside of central stores. We had a 15-inch pipe that was replaced with a 30-inch pipe. We had a 21-inch pipe right here that was replaced with a 24-inch pipe. And then a 20 and 24-inch pipe here was replaced with a 42. So we greatly increased the amount of storage that we had just inside the pipe diameters that allowed us to store runoff that would occur inside the operations center. And then our stormwater pump station would take that and pump it over the levee. This contract was awarded by the board in January of 2015. The contract price was a little over $250,000, and that project was completed in November 2016. And that leads us to 2022, the phase two Fluor Drive Operations Center Stormwater System Improvements. This was the contract that the board awarded here just a couple months ago at their January 25th meeting. And you may recall that the contract was WRH Incorporated out of Lamoni. The contract amount was $1.18 million. And the project completion date is scheduled to be December 2022, later on this year. This project here consists of rebuilding the existing pump station and having three large capacity pumps, each capable of pumping 5,000 gallons per minute with its own piping system so that the pumps don't have to fight against each other. They'll each have their own piping system to pump water that is taken off of our minor system of curbs, gutters, intakes, and pipe, collecting it here in the stormwater pump station and then pumping it over the levee, where again, it can be conveyed by overland drainage patterns to the Raccoon River. And here's an elevation view of that same pump station. Again, the runoff collected by our minor system is collected through this pipe and into the sump for the pump station. And then we have three 5,000 gallon per minute pumps that will pump that water through this pipe and over the levee. We have three primary benefits from this phase two project, again, which the board awarded here a couple months ago. One of the benefits is that it increases the effectiveness of the existing system of pipes, intakes, and curbs, and we've been referring to that as the minor system, by conveying runoff to outside the levee and restoring the overland flow component, that is the major system, to the overall drainage network. Again, the example of the minor system working together with the major system to form a complete drainage network. Second project benefit is that it reduces or eliminates ponding of water at central stores and in parking lots during major storm events. And then last but not least, it reduces the labor associated with setting up temporary pumps, piping, and electric generators during pending high Raccoon River flood levels. Well, today, hopefully that you've gained a more in-depth understanding of the stormwater collection system here at the Fluid Drive Operations Center. And with that new understanding, a realization of the important role that this phase two contract is going to have on effectively conveying stormwater runoff from the operations center. As always, I've always appreciated these opportunities, and I appreciate this opportunity to provide you with this additional background on this important project. Having the information that we've covered today, I think can help you be better informed and assist you in making better, good, and sound business decisions in the future. And if there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you so much for this presentation. Ironically, I went down a rabbit hole on my own today for another work-related reason, trying to understand stormwater management a little bit better. So I appreciate a lot of that background and introductory information. And I assume from that information that these improvements are obviously preparing us for 100-year events, but also being aware that climate is changing. How will this protect us or put us in a better position for 500-year floods or anything larger? More larger events that we can anticipate.
Yeah, well, I think this particular our system inside the operations center, I think, would be hard pressed as it exists today to handle a 500-year storm. I believe it could handle a 100-year storm if it has some assistance with some additional pumps that we have in our operations center that could be placed strategically. They're close to the floodgates. And that's again how we used to do it before we embarked on this particular project here. We had that 2003 pump station. And what was done before that was our operations folks would just take generators, pumps, and piping and insert it into the existing storm sewer as it existed at that time, and then string the pipes over the levee and pump it out that way. If we ever got into a situation where we had a 500-year storm, that's probably what we would need to do to supplement the capacity of this phase two project that we're in right now.
Okay, thank you for that. This was a very informative presentation, so I'm not sure if I have any questions off the top of my head. I pass it to Joel to see if you have any additional thoughts or questions.
Nothing more from me. Any questions I would have had were answered.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Bern. Like I said, I spent my afternoon looking at stormwater management information, so I appreciate kind of having it being told to me rather than me trying to dig and read for it all. Appreciate the work you're doing in this project.
Well, thank you. It was a timely effort then.
Ted, any comments on your end?
No, Andrea, I don't have anything to add today. I think we've had great conversation already. I think I will leave it at that.
All right. And then do we have any in public joining us today that have any thoughts or comments that they would like to share?
I don't see anyone online. Michelle, is there anyone in person there with you?
Nope, I'm fine solo.
Okay, I think we're good.
Okay. Well, with that, thank you all for joining us today. I appreciate all the information shared and the educating. And we'll just plan on seeing everyone later this month at our board meeting.
Sounds good.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.